This is Bottomley, reel 9.
Oh, that's a concert party that used to come and give us a show. Those are soldiers.
What sort of programme would you have?
Oh, you'd have a tenor and a baritone, or an Ensor used to come and give us a show. You'd have comics, they'd crack local topical jokes, and you'd have Sue Brett that would dance and that sort of thing. Nothing sophisticated like they have now, telling suggestive stories and things. It was all quite clean, and we had a lot of fun out of it. They used to sing, the straight singer would sing songs like Till the Sands of the Desert Grow Cold. I don't suppose you know it, do you? Till the Sands of the... That was very popular. And Roses of Picardy, that was a hot favourite. And, all sorts of sentimental songs. And... that was our... the hockey team.
Did you have much time for sports?
Yes, with a field at the side, and we had hockey. I left two hockey sticks out there. And lacrosse, we played lacrosse. Which I think is a fearsome game, really. I got knocked out with a lacrosse thing one time.
In this picture, do these women have different colours?
We were allowed white... These are more coffee-coloured colours. She has a brown collar on. Brown was the official, but when nobody was looking, we'd trim ourselves up with a white or a coffee-coloured collar. That really, they were for the NCOs. But if we were caught, we were in to bother. And you see, they've all got... And look at Jerry Bowen. She's even made a V-neck of hers, which was very naughty. She was very bold. That was just for the photograph, I think. If she'd been caught, she'd have been into bother.
What sort of punishment would she have? Or would other people have for things?
I don't remember much about the... We were given CB, kept in our free time. And you'd have to keep going to the office every half hour to report and that sort of thing. And I never got into any bother like that. Once we had a bit of a bother. One night, there was a lot of noise coming from our hut, but I was asleep. Two of us were asleep. Next morning at roll call, Miss Welshford said, occupants of huts, were we 9 or something like that, report at my office after roll call? So of course we all went out, and I said, well, I wonder what she wants us for. And Trixie Morgan said, well, we made rather a lot of noise last night, and she came and knocked on the window and said, quiet please. And she said, it must be about that. I said, well, I never heard you. She said, oh, you were asleep. Anyway, I went in with the rest of them. We all stood round while she sat at a table and read the riot act and wanted to know what all the noise was about. And what did they call a big girl? With a very big girl who was very comical. She went to Australia. She said, well, you see, ma'am, we were having an argument about Queen Victoria. She said, yes, but there's no need to make all that noise. Other people were asleep, and why weren't you asleep? And she went on telling the tale. And she said, now I want each one individually to give me the promise that when they get to bed, they'll go straight off to sleep. And when she come to me, Trixie Morgan, she asked her, oh, she said she wasn't in it. So Miss Welshford turned around. She said, who wasn't it? She said, White wasn't in it. She was fast asleep. So she said, I was rather surprised to see you in here with this crowd. And when we got out, they all started thumping me. They said, She said, rather surprised to see you, and you, any other time when you weren't asleep, you'd be the ringleader. I said, ah, well, I got out of that nicely. But they just had to give their solemn promise that they wouldn't do it again. She was like a school teacher, you know. We were treated like school kids in a lot of respect. The women, ordinary women like me, were not supposed to fraternise with officers, men officers. If you want, if your brother came to see you and he was a man officer, you'd have to, you couldn't go out with him. You had to sit and talk to him in front of the officer, our officers. And if she was very broad-minded, she'd let you have a cup of tea with him in the in our mess hall. But the ruling was no fraternising with officers. Mind you, quite a few of them went out with officers on the quiet, because one of them, I know one time, when we were going out in the lorries to Cressy, Jerry Bowen, who was in our hut, came in a real stew. She'd been drinking champagne and she'd had nothing to eat while she was a bit squiffy. And she'd been out with an officer and they'd been walking. She said they were hurrying back to catch the lorry to the camp, when who should they see but one of our officers come up the road. So she said she pushed him into a ditch at the side of the road while she strode on as if she was by herself, you see, past our officer. And this poor fellow scrambled out of the ditch when our officer had gone past. And he was thoroughly vexed about it because he was, well, it was so undignified. But that was the ruling. We hadn't to be seen mixing with officers. But there isn't a rule or a law brought out that hasn't some way of being got round. I think that was the same with the present-day petrol rationing. You know, all these things are brought out and you can't do this and you can't do that. But all the time they're bringing these out and saying what you can do and what you can't do, the wide boys around the corner making rules to combat all that.
What was your relationship with the women administrators?
Oh, well, personally, I was always quite friendly with them. You called them ma'am and showed them respect, which they were due to, being officers. We were taught by Dame Helen. It was the uniform that commanded respect, not the person inside it. And the uniform represented the country and the king, because we had a king then. And I always remembered that in the Second War, when I had girls in my charge, you see, and I said, when they were out in the street in their uniforms, they'd to remember that they were members of the forces and to behave accordingly. What they did in civvy clothes, away from the place, was not my business. My business was to see that they served the king in a fit manner, not to bring disgrace on the corps at all. But I got that from Dame Helen, you see. She instilled that into us, that when in uniform, we must always remember that we were members of the QMAAC, and as such, we had a direct duty to Queen Mary as our head, not to disgrace her in any shape or form. Well, she was good like that. She had very high principles. Our YWCA people and people in the Scottish huts and people in the Salvation Army huts, they were all civilians working in France. They wore a sort of uniform, but it wasn't a military uniform like ours. Be perhaps an overall with SA, Salvation Army, or something like that on the collar, just to tell who they were.
How did they get on with the WACs?
Oh, very friendly, very nice. If we had a concert and could ask anybody like that, we'd invite those sort of people, English people. Now, we had a lady that belonged to the Scottish huts, who was, I think she was Scottish, I'm not sure. But she was very, very nice, and she worked not far from our office And very often she was allowed to come. She'd pass the guard, he'd let her in to have a chat with us. And she eventually married our French interpreter, André Antoine. He's written in here. He was a character. Another one that's dead. He wrote something in here. This is as near we got as being suggestive. Here's to the girl who's mine, all mine. Who's written this? Billy. I don't know who Billy is. She's beautiful hands and lips divine, but she gambles, she bets, and she smokes cigarettes. And I'm sadly afraid that at times she forgets that she's mine, all mine. I don't know. It's written by Billy. I don't know who Billy is. One of the brought down raiders is reported to have said to his captors, "Vivas Germans." The man had naturally imagined they were angels. No man's word is as good as his war bond. Pay and be thankful. That's a play on words. You asked me for something original. I hardly know how to begin, for there's nothing original in me except original sin. And that's Lottie Watt. And I had this in my hand 2 years ago when I went to a reunion, and Lottie Watt was there, and I hadn't seen her since these days. And I said, she used to have gorgeous red hair, and now she's snowy white. They're all grey except me. I don't know why I don't go grey. But I went up and I said, "Do you recognise that writing?" And she looked at it and she read it. She said, "That's me." And she said, "Who are you?" You see, we forget one another. When I told her who I was, she said, "Good Lord." She said, "Did you marry that signal boy?" I said, "Of course I did." Oh, dear. This one's dead. Trixie, little girl, just blooming into womanhood. What deem you the fairest way to spend the life that lies before you? Many rich gifts are yours. Youth and comeliness go hand in hand to serve you as you please. Will you, carefree and thoughtless, pursue the fleeting joys? Will you, with much toil and great weariness, exact the deeper pleasures? High achievements, much learning, lasting fame may be your reward. Oh dear. Many are the wretched and sick around you. Blessed is the giver of even a cup of cold water. A life devoted to the needy, a noble choice. Little girl, think you 'tis the best? Soft little arms are stretched out to you. Baby fingers entwine themselves in yours. I wasn't even married then. Small rosy mouths cry to you for food. Wondrous eyes look up at mother. God smiles. Little girl, just blooming into womanhood, deem you this last the fairest choice? This to little sister Pearlie with much love and best wishes. Hey, dearie. I laughed at that. I thought, oh, she's getting romantic. A little spark may cause a big flame. My daughter wrote that in when she was very little. When you get the bloomin' ump, carry in sandbags to the dump, and to make things rather worse, it comes on to rain. Don't curse, try smiling. That was a nurse at the hospital. Oh dear. Here's to as good days to come as we had at Strensel. Oh, that was the last war. I went to Strensel before the war to train train with the Coilies to be a sergeant.
Did everybody carry an autograph book?
Nearly everybody, yes. Her nightly 9 o'clock. That's supposed to be me sitting on my bed. Smoking a cigarette. 9 o'clock every night. That was my last for the day.
What time were you required to turn your lights out?
Well, we were supposed to turn them out about, I should think about 9:30, something like that. We had At first, our signal was an enamel plate with a spoon, and Pip, Edith Hall, the NCO, used to come to the gate when we all used to stand up that road, the courting couples, you know, waiting for the signal to go in. She used to come and bang, bong, 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 on the plate, and we all had to go in for roll call then, for supper and roll call. And then the enamel plate, her enamel plate and spoon kept disappearing, and she kept borrowing other people's. And then at the finish, they got a gong. The army supplied us with a stand with a great big gong on it and a thing to strike it and just rattle on it. You could hear it all over the place. And that went when there was an air raid. That was our air raid signal as well. Nobody dared take that away, but the spoons and the enamel plates used to disappear. Oh, this is what I was looking for, that the Frenchman wrote in. Une belle femme, Plato's yeux. Une bonne femme, Plato cœur. L'une est un bijou, l'autre est un trésor.